G'day, I'm Indy Wood, and this is The Local Update, a podcast looking at local issues, events, and personalities from around the Bega Valley. And this week on the program, well, at a recent Bega Valley Shire Council meeting, the committee of the Tathra Community Garden was given the go-ahead to start development of a community garden opposite the surf club there in Tathra. We'll catch up with the treasurer of the community garden, Jamie Shaw, later in the program. We'll also catch up, as we do each week, with local history buff Graham Farram. This week on the program, Graham is telling the story of George Trad. George was a local from the community of Lochiel, was considered to be a bit of a hawker, travelling around with his horse and cart, collecting and selling all kinds of things.
I don't know about you people, but when I go looking for something, I'm always looking around the edges too, just to see what I could find. I'm going to do something about our politics eventually. There's a very interesting portrait of Henry Clark that's hanging in the portrait hall there. And I thought, well, I'll go to the family files and see if I can find something in there on Clark. But in fact, Mr. Clark lived mostly at Bergalia up in Maruya. So there's only just two things about that particular object and another object in there. But there was a document with the title The Clarks at Lochiel, The Story of a Pioneering Family at Lochiel Pambula by James F. Clark. Now, there's no date on that, but he says he was born on the 28th of August 1930. And I'm realising, no, this seven-page document really doesn't have anything to do with Henry Clark. But then I get to one page, page five, and there's a heading, George Trad. And I thought, well, I've got to be able to speak about George Trad because we've got his wagon here and his £10 notes. This would be a reminiscence of something that happened about 1940 from internal evidence in this document. This is pages 5, 6 and 7. Before I started school, Mother would take me and the baby, which at this time would have been Nola, into Lochiel and buy needles and cotton from an Indian hawker that would come into the district at least every 5 or 6 months. His name was George Trad. When in the Lochiel area, he would stop at Dick Hart's and sell to the local women from there. He had a horse, a covered-in wagon that he would sell out of and also live in. He mostly had a dog of some kind. He had made a smaller wagon that he had hooked onto the back of his wagon. The dog lived and mostly travelled in that. His horse, by the time that they arrived at Lochiel, would be poor and sore from the work that it had to do. He usually would be booked by the police for cruelty to dumb animals a few times before he got to Lochiel. George Trad wore a turban and a very loose shirt and trousers that finished at the knees. He also had a knife in the belt that appeared to be made of a piece of wide cloth. On his feet he wore what appeared to be slippers, with the toes turned up. You could not see much of his face. All I can remember from those days was his large nose and piercing black eyes. We were told that if we did not behave ourselves, the next time that Trad was around, we would be sent away with him. naturally, we were terrified of him, while the women were buying their needles and cotton. If one of the many kids there started to cry, Trad would say to them, "Be quiet, or you will come with me, and I will have you for tea." Most of us would go into nervous shock and hang on to our respective mothers or older sisters. Trad would camp at the Harts for a couple of days, and then he would drive along to Walter Holmes and rest his horse there for at least 2 weeks before he tackled the road up to Bombala. From there he would catch the train back to Sydney to replenish the supplies of the items that he sold. He travelled up and down the south coast for years. While he was in the area, and after we had started going to school, we would still give him a wide berth. He would call out to us to come and see the pretty things that he had. When he did that, all the kids would run as fast as they could to their homes. I can remember when I would have been about 10 years old. My older brother George and I were walking up Spring Creek Hill on the way to Dry Lakes when we saw wheel marks of a wagon with the smaller wheel marks of the dog wagon in between. We slowly caught up to him, and under the floor of the cart there was a large piece of tarpaulin that was tightly tied up and fastened with thick rope to hooks that were hanging from the floor of the wagon. We took no notice of this at the time. Instead of walking past him as we would have done with any other traveller, we called the dogs and walked into the bush and continued on to Dry Lakes. On the last trip that was done by Trad, there was a lot of trouble for him. Mother and father came home from Pambula and they were both very excited about the news that they had heard about George Trad. Apparently, while he was going up Whipstick Mountain on the Pambula side of Wyndham, 3 or 4 of the young local louts in the Wyndham area had hidden under the culvert that was and still is halfway up Whipstick Mountain. They crawled out as Trad drove over, and one of them, hanging on the underneath of the wagon, with a sharp knife, cut the rope that held the piece of tarpaulin in place. When the rope was cut, the bags that it held in fell onto the road, and the louts pulled them down into the gully. The louts could feel that there were skins in the bags. They waited until Trad was out of sight around the bend in the road. Then they carried the bags, without opening them, down to where they had tied up their horses, and riding through the bush on bridle tracks were in Wyndham long before Trad. When Trad pulled into the spot where he usually sold his wares to the local woman, he looked under the cart, and when he saw that the tarpaulin had fallen off, as he thought, he quickly went to the local hire car firm and hired them to drive him back down to 6 Mile and the Whipstick Mountain, hoping to find the tarpaulin and the bags. As Trad and his old horse could only travel about 6 miles a day, it was not very long before they were up to where he had camped the night before. Naturally, there was no tarpaulin or bags there. On arriving back at Wyndham, he went and told the police. The one policeman went with him to his wagon and had a look at where the tarpaulin had been tied under the cart. He soon saw that the ropes had been cut. He asked Trad what was in the bags. He was told, skins. By this time, the louts were in the local hotel drinking and boasting about the skins that they would sell to the skin buyer that came through the district once a month. They had not opened bags at this time. When the policeman heard about what was being said at the hotel, he went and told them, if they had the bags of skins at the police station in an hour, he would not charge them. The skins were at the station well before the hour was up. Before Trad was given his bags of skins, he was told to open one of them so the police could see what sort of skins he had in them. Trad said he would not. So the police cut the twine that was around one of the bags, and when the skins were tipped out onto the floor, to the surprise of the police and the louts, koala bear skins were lying there in their dozens. They are protected animals. The other bags were then opened, and in them were platypus skins, native cat from the Maruya area, carpet snake skins, domestic cats and dogs that were well marked. Also, there were lyrebird tails and other bird feathers. Trad was arrested on the spot. When the police went to put his horse and wagon in the police yard for safety, he found inside the wagon a large amount of stolen items that had been bought by Trad on his trip down the south coast. When his court case was heard, he was given a heavy sentence. And after he was released from jail, he was never seen on the coast again. There also were a lot of trappers caught and fined or jailed. The Indian Export Company was raided and a very large quantity of protected skins and feathers were seized. All this because the local louts cut the ropes under Trad's wagon. They were charged with stealing, but let off with a bond. I don't know what happened to Trad's wagon and horse. Since I wrote about George Trad, I have found out that Trad's wagon is in the museum at Bega. I called into the museum and was shown by the curator Trad's old wagon. It is just as I remember it all those years ago. There may be other stories about Trad's last trip into the Loch Eel area. What I have written is what was told to me by my father. The first five pages of the book just goes through all the different people that lived there and how they went to school and walking and horses. It's lovely, it's quite good. But that's not been recorded in the Trad file, that story's there. So I thought that was worth noting. And then I moved on. I was reading a little book about Dry River Quorma, the past 100 years. 1877 to 1977. Now, we all know what happened up at Quorma, Cobarga, all around that way. The fire came right up to the school at Quorma, I'm told. And if you ever see that, that's what it looks like, a little blue book. 1977, that's getting old now. You'd be lucky to find one. I bought it off a lady who lived opposite me for a little while. She was in temporary accommodation before she moved to a granny flat at her son's place. Obviously, I can't verify any of that. And one of our audience members, Nita Quinn, a life member here, she actually remembers the story of the Indian hawker who was down at Loch Eel. And we might be able to find out more about that for another show on another occasion. But as far as George Trad goes, reading the 100 years of the Dry River Quorma School was good fun. Only 20 pages, printed by Bega Times Print. Some people might remember when we had the Bega Times here for a little while. Mrs. Betty Taylor did the research for it. On page 20, the last page, there's big heading, "Do you remember?" And a whole list of things that, you know, people had brought up about, oh, I remember the day and did this happen and that happened. Well, there were two George Trad entries, only this time George Trad's been spelt with two D's. George Trad chased a couple of boys into the school after they had stoned his horse and cart. The terrified boys hid under the teacher's desk. George Trad chased three boys as far as the cemetery for stoning his caravan, then went up to the village and demanded three boys. One boy red hair, one boy blue shirt, one boy khaki trousers. Thanks very much.
Graham Farram is a member of Bega's Historical Society and my regular guest here on The Local Update. Each week, Graham looks at the issues, events and personalities from the history of the Bega Valley that have made Bega what it is today. I've spoken previously about the loss that my family and others in the Tathra community felt when bushfires ripped through Tathra in Easter of 2018, destroying 70 houses and affecting a whole lot of others in the community, of course. I've spoken also previously about the fact that I feel that there's some positive change that's come about Tathra in the aftermath of those fires. One such example would be the decision to develop a community garden in Tathra. And it looks like there's strong movement in that front, with the committee of Tathra's community garden inviting community members to attend an event this coming Saturday to look at the space and talk about the plans. I caught up with Jamie Shaw, the treasurer of the community garden, recently to talk through what the garden's about and what's planned for this weekend.
People often say, you know, why, you know, are community gardens that common in rural areas? And they actually are. There's one in Eden, Pambula, Marimbula, Cobargo. So they are quite common. And Tathra particularly, you know, a lot of the streets are quite steep and the backyards are quite small in some of the areas, so, and don't get a lot of sun. So a lot of people have showed an interest because they, you know, don't have that space or the a reasonable aspect to grow, you know, vegetables and things in like that. But also the garden, although it's been sort of talked about for quite a number of years, it's really been had a lot of motivation behind it since the bushfires, where people during the bushfires, the bushfire in Tathra particularly in 2018, lost all their gardens and their houses and things like that. A lot of the garden infrastructure they had, you know, burned down, as well as their properties or, you know, sheds and things. And so people were really keen to have somewhere that they can, you know, grow things and grow food that wasn't affected. But, you know, it's now 2 years on, and because of the process, it's taken that long to sort of really get going. Some of those people may not require it, but there are people who are still waiting for their houses to be rebuilt. But also, there's a real benefit for community gardens, you know, in reconnecting community as well. And people often participate because they want to grow food, but because they also want to spend time with other people with similar interests. And, you know, gardening goes right across the spectrum of people, you know, older people, younger people, you know, and so it's sort of a pretty good way to sort of rebuild connection and networking in the community. So Tathra is sort of part of that, I guess, in those terms.
I wanted to ask you about that. Have you noticed a change in the connection of the community since the fires?
I think I've noticed a change in people wanting to be more connected. You see that on Facebook pages and things like that, that people are searching for those vehicles, I guess, to become more connected. You know, I think the fires really, and now COVID and the fires this summer as well, have really sort of brought home that those real connections for people. And at the moment, it's on Zoom and things like that, telephones. But, you know, with gardening, you can do it in a, you know, social distancing way anyway. But, you know, people are, I think, have realised that those community connections and community organisations provide a lot more than just the, you know, the basic reason they're there, whether it's the bridge club in the green shed or whether it's the Tathra Community Garden or the surf club. You know, there's a basic sort of function there for those organisations, but there's also a much broader connection, and that, you know, that flows out from gardening as well, I think, and the community garden.
Belonging to something.
Yeah, well, it'll hopefully become a bit of a hub for people to, you know, come together and meet and discuss other things other than gardening, or, you know, and doing food swaps and, you know, maybe, you know, donating food that's excess to, you know, places like Ricky's Place and things like that in Bega, you know, so there's a whole range of things that it's quite a good tool for. So I think, but yeah, you're right. I think people are looking for more connection, and whether we get that on an internet basis or whether it's a good, you know, better way to do it is in a face-to-face way, like in a garden. Mm. That's the sort of added benefit, I think, for those sort of things.
So you've been, what, probably at least nearly 2 years in the planning stage. How soon can we see some activity in this garden?
Yeah, it's been over 2 years. It's sort of we got a grant initially in 2018 for the garden through the bushfire recovery appeal from the 2018 fires, and it's been a slow process because it's sort of the land where it is, which is down in the green shed and corner of Andy Pool Drive and Dual Care at present, is Crown land, and it's, so it's managed by council, and there's a whole swag of things that had to happen, and council were really helpful in getting all that moving for us, and it really helped all the way along the way. It's close. We've got a community sort of open day on the 5th, on Saturday, at 1:30. So of the sort of 40 people that expressed an interest originally, we're going to sort of hopefully get a few people down there in the social distancing way and talk about, you know, what needs to happen now that the DA's been approved and we've ticked a lot of the boxes, where we go from here. But there's some small things council require us to do before we can start, which is doing a management plan to make sure the garden's managed in a way that's sort of, you know, conducive to the local community and not, you know, it isn't sort of a, you know, problem for the shops and tourists and things like that, which I don't think it will be, but we've just been doing a maintenance schedule and things like that.
I was surprised by this, Jamie. I guess I assumed that something like a community garden would just jump into action and everyone would be happy, but there's been some concern from the community. What's going on there?
Yeah, I think a lot, you know, there was concern. I think that where the garden's located, right in the centre of Tathra, you know, people have a perception of community gardens of being a bit sort of rough and, you know, messy and things like that, and it's not often the case. They're quite beautiful places quite often, but the ones I've seen anyway. But you know, that some of the shop owners and things like that had some concerns with, you know, things like composting on site and, you know, making sure there's no vermin and, you know, things like that. And those were, you know, real concerns. And I think council process has sort of, you know, the planning department has sort of assessed those concerns, and then we've negotiated a set of compromises to satisfy some of those concerns. One was the car parking. And so we're putting in some extra car parking on an existing concrete slab that can be used by the garden people and the other people that use the green shed specifically. So that, you know, frees up some of the car parking on really busy times, things like that. We've moved the garden from where it was to, you know, only a 30 or 40 metres away to another area, which is a little bit further away from the shops and things like that. So that reduces some of that concern as well. So it's been, there was initial concerns, and there always are with new things as well. But I think the process has been really good to find some, you know, compromise and make sure that everyone's sort of happy, really. And it's sort of, again, it slowed the process up, but, you know, in a long-term situation, it's great to, you know, address those issues early rather than them becoming real problems later on, you know.
So for those not in Tathra, where is this garden?
So it's down on the as you come down the hill from the top of Tathra towards the shops. It's just there's an old tennis court and roller skating rink, funnily enough. Which is now just the concrete slab, and it's sort of just before you get to the shops on the flat, sort of opposite the surf club on the other side of the road. So it's quite a central location. It means that people using the garden can walk or cycle, which is great, and it has access to toilets and things like that, and the shops if people want to get a coffee and things, you know, things like that. So it's sort of quite centrally located at the bottom on Andy Pool Drive.
You're obviously going to do a whole lot of growing and hopefully swapping of food, but is there going to be any kind of retail aspect to this?
Not at this stage, and I think we sort of deliberately avoided that. It's sort of more specifically, hopefully, so people can have an individual garden plot to grow their own food for their own use. But then we may, depending on what the people who are interested in being part of the garden decide, we may have a shared cropping area, which is sort of, you know, for groups of people to grow, you know, one or two crops, say garlic or things like that, that are take up a lot of space in people's own gardens as well. So we haven't discussed a retail sort of thing, but the original concept was mainly just to, you know, supply people with their own food, and any surplus we'd either donate or give away or do food swaps sort of thing. And we had, do have a Tartara food swap program in place now with about 15 people, and hopefully that can become a part of the garden too, so we can have food swap days and things like that.
A big thing about community gardens is growing food. Are you guys doing anything different in that regard?
Yeah, well, hopefully we'll have incorporated some local indigenous bush food plants. We've got a couple of the local traditional owners interested in, you know, talking about what plants and things they use as food plants. And so hopefully we need to plant some screenings and stuff around the garden. And so hopefully we can include some native food plants and, you know, have some interpretive signs on what they are and what they're used for as part of the garden as well, which would be great. And it sort of ties in that local sort of traditional owner history as well, which is really important, and that cultural aspect, which is great. It's on Birringarnge country in the Yuin Nation, so it's, we like to sort of acknowledge that traditional cultural part of the area as well, because it's a vital part of it.
We should talk about the exact times and locations for this event on Saturday.
Yeah, so it's an open day and a walkthrough, just really to talk about what's going to happen and what we need to do, and, you know, to gauge, you know, hopefully draw people who are interested back in after a long hiatus of 2 years. But and so it's 1:30 on the 5th of September, so this Saturday, and it's on, if you come to the corner of Andy Pool Drive and Dilkeera Crescent, you'll see the green shed there, and, you know, that's where we'll be. And it'll only go for an hour, but it'll be just a bit of a talk and get people's ideas about, you know, what we need to do and how we lay it out, all that sort of thing. So it should be a really interesting day, even if you're not sort of interested in having a garden bed down there. It might be informative just to come along anyway. We should be good.
And where can people find more info if they need to?
There's a Facebook page, Tartara Community Garden. They can find, that's the main sort of link at the moment. We don't have a website or anything, but yeah, so the Facebook page would be the best way to contact us. Just message the Facebook page is probably the best way.
Jamie Shaw is the treasurer of Tartara's Community Garden Group, and the event being held this weekend is on the site of the community garden opposite the surf club, starting at 1 p.m. this Saturday, the 5th of October. You're listening to The Local Update, a podcast looking at local issues, events and personalities from around the Bega Valley. A huge thank you to my guest for this week, Jamie Shaw from the Tartara Community Garden Group, and of course to my regular guest, Graham Farram from the Bega Historical Society. You can find all the info about this episode and any other episode of the podcast at the website indiemedia.com.au. Don't forget you can also subscribe to the podcast using iTunes or any other podcast provider. And a reminder also that this program now being broadcast as a radio show on 93.7 Edge FM Community Radio in the Bega Valley. We're on air between 11 a.m. and midday every Sunday on 93.7 Edge FM. My name's Indy Wood. This is The Local Update. Thank you so much for your company this week. I'll catch you again next week. Bye now.